Welcome to The Jump. I'm Rachel Nichols alongside Richard Jefferson and Matt Barnes. Coming up, the Lakers closed out their 7-game road trip last night with a win over the Hornets. Going to ask the guys what they have learned about the Lake Show without AD or LeBron. The team has gone 4-3 in their absence, so stick around for that. First, though, last month, a giant cargo ship got stuck in the Suez Canal. For those of you who don't remember back to your elementary school geography lessons, this was a big deal. The Suez is the man-made passage that lets boats slice through Europe instead of having to sail all the way down and around the tip of Africa. It's the much easier path, and it being blocked was a major issue. The idea is something that the Sixers in particular may want to think about tonight as they play the Nets in a game that will have a huge hand in determining which team gets the number one seed in the East. And yeah, I know, it has become fashionable for teams to say, seeding doesn't matter. And there's basis for that. It's been 5 years since the East's top seed was the team that even ended up in the finals. Richard, you remember which team that was. That was your team.
Yeah.
Still, this year, it sure looks important with the way the Brooklyn, Philadelphia, and Milwaukee squads are all clumped at the top of the bracket. Getting the number one seed for, say, Philly would be the difference between having to face both Kevin Durant and Giannis Antetokounmpo blocking your path to the finals instead of only one of them. There's also the matter of home court advantage. Philadelphia has won 80% of its home games this season, but only 59% of its road games. So yeah, having a potential Game 7 of the Eastern Conference Finals on their home floor would be like, well, having unblocked access to the Suez Canal. You can take your chances on the longer, harder route, but it's a lot more wear and tear on your resources, and you just might not be able to complete the journey. This holds true for more than just the teams at the top of the conference. There's also a clump of teams in the middle fighting for their own postseason positioning. You got the Hawks, who beat the Raptors last night to keep their grip on the 4 spot. This is important, for one, because it further emphasizes the terrific job that Nate McMillan has done since stepping in as interim head coach. He is 16-5 so far with Atlanta. And while Nate is too classy to take a victory lap around the 9th place Pacers team that fired him this offseason, certainly could. Number two, though, is that if the Hawks can stick in 4th, then they will get home court in the first round, an important distinction to a young team without much playoff experience. And then there are the Heat. The defending conference champs are sitting at 6 right now, and at number 5 are the Celtics, who have won 4 straight and are finally looking more like the team that's played in 3 of the past 4 Eastern Conference Finals. Part of that is due to Marcus Smart, who has bounced back from that calf injury, and last night defended like a maniac in an eventful win over Portland. And part of that is due to Jason Tatum, who last night dropped a casual 32 to follow his 53-point performance from earlier in the week. After the game, I asked Jason about his continuing recovery from COVID, which he had back in January. Please note, it is April now. Take a listen.
I know that the breathing stuff lingered for you for a while. Would you say you're back at 100% yet?
Close, very close. You know, it's just, it's a process. It takes a long time. I take an inhaler, you know, before the game, you know, since I've tested positive. This has kind of, you know, helped with that and opened up my lungs. And, you know, I never took an inhaler before.
It's a bummer to hear he's still dealing with any of that, but good to hear he's got it under control. The Celtics will certainly need him at his best in an Eastern Conference playoffs that promises to be more competitive than we've seen in a while. Remember, people, the seas are rough out there right now. Now is the time to set your course on the best, quickest route and hope nothing gets stuck in your way. And with that, guys, let's kick off this whole Eastern Conference discussion by talking about that big showdown tonight. Nets Sixers, 7 Eastern on ESPN. Harden, Durant, and Blake Griffin, and LaMarcus Aldridge all out tonight. The good news for Brooklyn is Kyrie is available to play after missing yesterday's game against the Wolves for attending to a family matter. As we look ahead with just over a month left in the regular season, which team do you trust more heading into the postseason, Brooklyn or Philly, Richard?
Well, I think right now you have to say Philly, mainly because Philly has had their whole team. We've seen everybody on their roster. Joel Embiid is back. Like, look, you have a guy like Ben Simmons who's up for Defensive Player of the Year and probably could be the leading candidate. You have Joel Embiid who was top 2, maybe top 3, you know, at times leading for the MVP. So this team has been playing great. So you have to trust them. The Nets still have more talent. If the Nets are 100% healthy, they will be the favorites, but they have not been that. And it's been now, what, 4 or 5 months?
Yeah, I don't think you have to pick Philly. I think Richard's trying to bully you into picking Philly. I'm still taking Brooklyn, and the key thing is their health. Obviously, if they're healthy, but they're such a talented team, similar to an all-star team or an Olympic team, where even though you haven't been with these guys for a long time, you're so talented you can make that chemistry work. Mm-hmm. And we've been harping on their defense a lot. If you look at it, Kyrie has been playing defense, James has been playing defense, KD plays defense. So their defense, I mean, I'm not exactly sure what their numbers are, but come playoff time, these guys are gonna be ready to play. Their key is their health. But I also love what Philly's been doing, and being healthy, and what Doc has.
Says who do you trust?
I trust the Nets because they have more experience and they've been there. And that's why I don't think the seeding matters so much, because the Nets have plenty of championship experience. Philly is new to this, and
that's
if
fair.
You know, if they're going to make that run, I think obviously a home court is more important for them.
I think the seeding doesn't matter as much for Brooklyn,
right.
Although if they are the number two, that means you got to face either Giannis or Embiid in the first in the conference final. Second round of the East, yes, you know what I mean.
Before
you
get to the conference finals. That also means those two guys have to face their three-headed monster,
right,
too,
exactly. So. But I would say that for Philly, it's very important,
absolutely.
Right? Because their margin is a little bit different.
Yep.
Their home record is a little bit different,
yep.
Right? The balance between that is different. And I just think the confidence level they would get would be different
but
than the Nets' confidence
if
level.
You also think about it, if Embiid has an off night in the playoffs, most likely Philly mm-hmm. has a good chance of losing.
Mm-hmm.
If KD doesn't have off nights,
guys,
if
yes.
Kyrie has an off night, if Harden has an off night, they can still win. You
yeah.
know what I mean? So it's just the Nets have a nice deck. That's
yeah,
all I got to
well,
say. They got
yes.
a nice deck.
Must be nice. And defensively, Nick Claxton, too. I don't want to forget to shout him out. I mean, he's been
absolutely.
Really what's
playing
powering
well.
Their defensive
playing
effort.
Well.
So, you know, we'll see how much playing time he ends up getting in the playoffs, because they certainly have a glut of guys at that position right now. All right, with that, let's kick things off by discussing. Oh, no, we just talked about that. Keep going. We're going to move on to Jason Tatum. I was like, we're discussing the things we just discussed, but I do want to circle back to Jason Tatum, because his performance against the Blazers last night, that final dagger three sealed the win. And look, you just heard his lingering COVID symptoms, Matt. What do you feel about the way he has been able to ramp up his game despite that late in the season, which is a version of what he did, of course, without the COVID after the All-Star break last year?
I'm a huge fan of Jason Tatum. I think he's one of the bright stars of the game. Obviously, him and Brown have identified themselves as one of the best young trios. I think a lot has to do with just Marcus Smart's presence. I know we're talking about Jason Tatum right now. His numbers post-All-Star break are 27 a game. He's at 50-40-90 from the field, so he's definitely stepped his game up. But although Marcus Smart's numbers aren't going to overwhelm you, although he'll drop 30 some nights, his presence on the floor is so comforting. It's almost like a security blanket for that team. And I think now that they're going to get him back in the mix, this was the team that I picked post All-Star to really kind of pick their game up.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, to be honest with you, with all due respect to the Hawks, outside of the Hawks, if there was no Brooklyn, I could see any of those 5-6 teams possibly making the finals, because
right.
the East is so wide open and wild and evenly matched.
Yeah, and look, this is Jason Tatum. You know, I had the opportunity to interview Brad Stevens, and
mm-hmm.
he said, look, with Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, we want them, by the time they're 27, to be two of the best leaders.
Forget how young they are.
Yeah, wow. we want them to
crazy.
Be two of the best
right.
leaders in the NBA.
Right.
So it's not just like, oh, they're scoring. And right now, Marcus Smart is such a heartbeat for them, and he is kind of like that defensive presence you see with guys like Draymond or,
mm-hmm.
you know, back in the day, Tony Allen. It's
mm-hmm.
like he just brings that intensity. But that's where they're working with Jason Tatum and Jaylen
mm-hmm.
Brown. All the talent's there. They both had All-Star games. They're 24 years old.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, okay, well, where can they improve to
that
make our team
step.
Great? And it's leadership. It's
mm-hmm.
every single day. It's the competitiveness. It's holding each other and other people accountable, not just the coach doing that. So I think Jason Tatum is reaching new heights, but we also have to look for not just his game, but his leadership mm-hmm. and how that improves.
If you missed the final minutes of that game last night because it was late on the East Coast, it is worth going back and taking a look. It was really fun ending. I really loved watching Jason Tatum and Carmelo Anthony go at each other.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, they're so much fun, and obviously the style's so similar, because Jason said after the game, is very sweet. He goes, Carmelo was one of my heroes. He's
right.
one of the guys, besides Kobe Bryant, that I really grew up wanting to play like, and you could see that.
Mm.
Also interesting from Marcus Smart in the post-game interview session last night, he said, I heard what everyone's been saying about me. I heard them say that I've lost a step. He said, I had to recover from an injury.
Right.
That's what was happening.
Mm-hmm.
He said, but I heard what everyone was saying. And by the way, he goes, two times, first team all defense. I think he's going to add another
one. I'll be
What's
fine.
That another one?
And he's
I'm
still
good.
In his 20s.
And I'm good. All right, coming up, guys, we're going to talk a little PG-13. He dropped 36 points in Kawhi's absence to beat. Oh, look. His old team, the Pacers, in Indiana.
Uh-huh.
After the game, his teammates said he is, quote, playing with a chip on his shoulder. We will discuss how that impacts the Clippers and the Western Conference playoffs. I do want to dig in deeper, though, on the performance last night, because 36 points, right? Dished out 8 assists. After the game, PG's teammate Marcus Morris Sr. said about his play, quote, "He's playing with a chip on his shoulder. He is making an emphasis of really taking over and being the best version of himself." Matt, I want to throw this to you because you just mentioned that preseason conversation you and Steven Jackson had with PG.
Yeah.
What do you think it means for the Clippers for him to be playing with this, quote, chip on his shoulder?
I think it's important. You know, Kawhi spoke a couple weeks about consistency. And, you know, heading toward the playoff, that's what you want. You want to have consistency. I think they're 8-2 in their last 10. They got about 14, 15 games left. You want to be hot at the right time. And I think Miami showed that last year. Getting hot at the right time got them to the finals. They're going to need PG to be this type of player in the playoffs, and I think he's capable of it. I'm excited about this team. I think, you know, from being a former Clipper, there was too much hype on them last year. I was picking them. We're not used to being favorites to win championships, you know. So they've been kind of floating under the radar now, getting their stuff together. T-Lew has these guys playing well, and I'm excited to see what they can do in the playoffs.
Yeah, and look, first of all, he's 50-50-100 over this six-game stretch. And so, look, there's never been any doubt about how talented he is, like how great he is. Like I said, he was still a top 10 player in the league at the beginning of the season, and people were trying to, like, chop off my head. And I was like, no, watch it, what he does. Talented. And, like, this is what he's doing right now. He's playing like a top 10 player in the league. Sorry for saying that, but ultimately, I think the thing for him, and I'm glad he's playing with a chip on his shoulder, and I saw your guys' podcast, what he said on that, a lot of it had to do with, in my opinion, when it was all said and done and they had that epic fail at the end, he was like, well, it wasn't championship or bust for us. And it was like, well, it was for everybody that was hyping y'all up. Like, and so I think now that he's playing with a chip on his shoulder, and I think that was probably what maybe they were lacking last year, is that chip on the shoulder. And so good for him, and he's doing every single thing in his power to be that level.
And look, it's trial and error a little bit when you learn what to say and how to say it, whether it be that, right? Some of the other things, he's like, oh, that was a bad shot about the Damian Lillard shot.
But also it's LA too.
Right.
LA,
it magnifies, it blows up everything. Yes. You don't get the same microcope in
Indiana, in Oklahoma City.
So you learn as you go along. And he, the things that he's been saying this year, it really, the excuses aren't there. He has been direct. He has taken accountability when he is screwed up. And that to me is awesome growth and fun to see. So we'll take a look and see what they do in the playoffs. All right, coming up, Matt and Richard are going to share their takeaways on the Lakers' performance without AD and LeBron. Keep it locked to the Dome.
Let's get it.
Welcome back. You know, Kendrick Perkins was on the show yesterday talking about he was micro-betting just like the first half of yesterday's, one of yesterday's games, and then, of course, texted me after halftime being like, see, I told you I was right.
There you go. They never tell you when they're wrong, though.
Still here with Richard and Matt in studio with me, and let's talk about the Lakers, who just ended a 7-game road trip last night with a win over the Hornets. Kyle Kuzma leading the way with 24 points. Dennis Schroeder added 19. LA has gone 4-3 on this trip without Anthony Davis or LeBron in the lineup. So, Matt, what have you learned about this team in this stretch without their stars?
They stayed above water, and that's what you want. Obviously, missing two stars, the best duo in the game. But I really like is this is going to help come playoff time. These guys are all going to be in rhythm. You know, it's not going to take Bron long to get back in rhythm. We'll see how long it takes AD to get back in rhythm. But they're going to need that third guy, and whether it's Kuzma, whether it's Schroeder, it can be Harrell sometimes. To me, their most important aspect is being healthy, and no matter how, like I said earlier, no matter how far they slide down, if they're healthy, they're still going to be the favorites in the West.
Now, I'm going to speak directly to Laker fans, right? I'm going to speak directly
to... It normally doesn't
go... You're in LA.
I know. Be careful. I understand.
I got death threats for doing that.
Yeah, people with head tattoos with stuff like that. Like, look, I'm going to speak directly to Laker fans. You will not see the impact of Drummond until LeBron and AD are back. Don't be like, oh,
there's some panicking last night. There's some panic.
Oh, what's Drummond? And I'm like, guys, LeBron James is one of the greatest passers this game has ever seen. Drummond needs that. Yep. Anthony Davis is one of the most skilled big men that's going to allow for less than three people to be trying to box out Drummond. If you thought that Dwight Howard was a key part to your championship, Drummond is better. Yeah. Drummond is like a younger, I want to say a young Dwight because Dwight was a monster, but he's like a younger Dwight Howard.
He was the best pickup to me come deadline buyout. Time, the buyout situation.
But you're not going to see that now until you've got LeBron out there on the floor, until you got Anthony Davis. So before you start getting all crazy about like Drummond's numbers, understand it'll skyrocket.
And I give him credit, by the way, because it would be easy to sort of fall into it. Well, where do I fit on this team? Okay, now what's going on? And he last night was very much like, yeah, I'm here for the defense and the offense will come and all of that. And it seemed kind of to have an even feel
great
about
pickup.
It. Yeah. And Dennis Schroeder, by the way, playing
played
as well
great.
As he had matters for them. Mm-hmm. And there was a little bit of a question after the trade deadline. It was his name that was in those talks in the swap for Kyle Lowry. The sticking point might have been Talen Horton-Tucker, but Schroeder's contract is also going to be up this summer. So that was seen as kind of an exchange for expiring versus expiring. He could have taken it personally. And instead, you know, look at what he has been doing. I covered their game over the weekend in Brooklyn. And when he got tossed out with Kyrie, look, of course, you would say the winner is the Lakers if you're losing Schroeder and Kyrie.
At that time in the game.
But at that time in the game, he was the leading scorer.
I had a chance to talk, you know, Chris Paul is good friends and our kids are good friends. And we talked this offseason about how much he loves Dennis Schroeder, one of the most competitive guys on both ends of the floor. Always working hard. He said he just loved playing with him. And you're seeing that over in L.A. This kid works hard. You can say what you want about him. You can say what you want about the hair dye and looking like Gizmo sometimes. But this dude goes out and plays his butt off every single night. And you're going to need that going in the playoffs.
Dennis the Menace, as his teammates call him. All right, I want to shift gears and head to the college ranks for this next topic. Very near to Richard's heart. Also, as I've mentioned many times on the show, half of our staff went to the University of Arizona. So this has been a big topic of conversation around here.
Look at those colors. They're beautiful.
U of A fired men's basketball coach Sean Miller last week. Jason Shear of the Wildcat Authority website reports university officials have hit the reset button and are now reevaluating their search because various former Arizona players, and we're talking about big NBA names here, voiced their displeasure with a report that Gonzaga's lead assistant, Tommy Lloyd, was in the pole position to get the job. The news leaked before former Wildcats Damon Stoudemire, Jason Terry, Miles Simon even had a chance to formally interview for the job. Now, Richard spoke to his fellow Zona alum again, an NBA favorite, Gilbert Arenas, about this search on social media, and we had to put it
How
on
you
TV.
Guys find this, Gilbert?
On the internet.
Who would you pick for the Arizona coach?
Damon Stoudemire.
Damon Stoudemire. Why Damon Stoudemire?
I mean, he's been coaching for a while now. He's established himself. You know, he's turned the whole program around, you know, where he went. So, I mean, he has the credentials. You know, an assistant coach doesn't have credentials.
Yeah.
Hey, listen, anybody that played, anyone that played should be considered first.
Absolutely.
So, Richard, that's kind of what we wanted to dive into a little bit more, because you have guys like Damon Stoudemire, who he's talking about, Juwan Howard, as we know. It took a while for him to get that job and then, of course, succeeding. Mm-hmm. And then on the other hand, you've got guys like Steve Kerr or Steve Nash, who just sort of walked into doing coaching jobs. So where do you think the bar or line is for former players? Is it easier in the NBA, harder in college? Patrick Ewing, we know, had a hard time until it got that.
That was the first name I was going to say. Patrick Ewing is one of the 50 greatest players in NBA history, and he coached for 10, 12 years and couldn't get an NBA job, and finally he went to his alma mater. And
did well.
And even when you talk about the WNBA, Adia Barnes just took the University of Arizona to a national championship, to a national championship game. And so you have these players that are forced to go do these jobs, and you understand. And Damon, you see, was an assistant coach. Mm-hmm. It is very hard for ex-NBA players, because it's like, even though you played 18 years or 15 years, they're like, well, you haven't been coaching. And it's like, well,
we've been playing.
Playing, and I've been gaining experience that way. And I don't think a lot of times that experience gives you don't give enough credit to that. But it is going to be very, very difficult. I know the alumni want something. And when you look at the success of a Juwan Howard and Patrick Ewing and of a Adia Barnes at their alma maters, that's where these Damon Stoudemire, Jason Terry, Miles Simon, Josh Pastner are standing up. And UCLA had a similar thing where they kind of wanted Earl Watson.
Yeah. It's a tough situation from a standpoint, and they always want to throw, well, you don't have experience. But if you think about it, most of these guys are point guards. And if you know, point guards are coaches on the floor. I mean, these guys are neck and neck with their head coach in the NBA. What I really love is how Carolina, Duke, Kentucky, they keep it in-house most of the time. They let their players come up under, and then they have legendary coaches, and then, you know, they raise their guys up. For some reason, other schools out west don't really do that. And whether we're talking college or NBA, it's just it's tough. And I think we need more representation a little higher up to be able to possibly have coaches or players come back and coach.
Mm-hmm. And I think the one thing that I think a lot of people are struggling, I don't know if that article, it was like a random blog that said something about Lloyd. And so you don't know how much truth that is. But when you look at, did they have a plan? Obviously, the Sean Miller thing has been floating and Sean Miller and the school has parted ways. But when you break, you know, look at the numbers, like this Arizona program has been one of the top programs over the last like 30 years. Mm-hmm. But when you look at the entire situation at North Carolina, they had a plan. Mm-hmm. And Roy Williams was like, I think Hubert is going to be the best individual to take over this job. And it didn't take very long. And you brought in a former player that had been putting in his dues. And so to see one of the top tier programs like North Carolina, and I believe Arizona is in that level, especially on the Western United States, like we didn't really have as much of a plan as we should given the size of our program.
You guys have both been coached by former players. I mean, I'm just going off the top of my head, Ty Lue, Doc Rivers, but there's many more. Mm-hmm. What have you noticed is the difference when a guy has been in the NBA, has been in the league for a long time? Steve Kerr obviously won many rings before he got to the Warriors. Steve Nash, Hall of Famer. What's the difference when guys like that are coaching you?
I would say they know your body, so they know rest, and then they know when to implement themselves and when to get out of the way.
Okay.
Because you're coaching grown men most of the time, you know, and if you have an intelligent team, it's probably, you know, Steve Kerr says some of the best coaching he does when he steps back.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Knowing
so I think two things right there is they know your body, rest, and in the grind it takes because they've actually been through that grind. And then two, they know when to implement themselves and when to take a step back. Sometimes when guys haven't played, they want to keep their hands on the game the entire time. And NBA players hate nothing worse than that.
Right.
Coach always wanting to call a player, always wanting to be a part. You got to trust the players on the floor.
And there's no one route, right? I mean, there are guys who never played who made great coaches.
Absolutely.
Yes.
But there's no one route in the other direction either.
Right.
There's guys who are former players who have made great, great.
And that's the one thing that, and Matt and I, our careers have gone so many different ways, but a lot of times with players, you have the ability to relate to players.
Mm-hmm.
Like even as a broadcaster, I can talk from a person that was a six man, that was a starter, mm-hmm. that was a leading scorer, that was a veteran on a bench. So I like literally over the 17 years that I played, I covered almost every role that you could have.
Yep.
So then when I go as a coach, I can go talk to a player, say, hey, you're a starter. This is what is expected. If you're a top scorer or you have to kind of make way for the younger guys, this is what is expected because you've been in all those roles and you have the ability to relate. So that's where players, even when they're not coaching, like they're gaining advantage and they're gaining experience doing that because they've been in those roles that they're now having to coach.
I like Richard if he was coaching a team, which by the way,
never
should not coach a team,
ever.
But he would just be like, hey, you remember seeing that Vince Carter highlight? I was the guy behind him.
Impressionable young minds should not be coached by me.
Formed by you?
No.
Matt, yes or no? Coach in your future?
No, I just coach my kids. I couldn't handle other people.
There we go.
You couldn't handle you.
Coming up, we're going to switch gears here. The NBA community reacting to the police shooting of Donte Wright in Minnesota. Stick around to hear from Jaylen Brown, Kevin Durant, and our panel here next. Much more serious topic now, though, guys. Please listen to Jaylen Brown. This is so important, and as usual, he summed it up exactly right. Take a listen.
We shouldn't be pleading or persuading people to see things for what they are. We know what this system is, and we know what it's capable of. But if you're watching this, listening, or tuning in, I just want you to know that your life has value, so much value. That they're trying so hard to make you feel otherwise. My life has value. My life had value before I played for the Celtics, and it will long after. At some point, you realize what you're dealing with. The power has and always will be with the people. You got to stand up and fight. What other solution do we have? That's really all I got.
Really, really, really powerful. Welcome back to The Jump. I'm Rachel Nichols, still here with Richard Jefferson, Matt Barnes. We are now joined by Shanae Ogumike. And the comments we just heard from Jaylen Brown were, of course, reacting to the events that occurred in Brooklyn Center, Minnesota on Sunday. Donte Wright, a black man, 20 years old, a father, was shot and killed by police during a traffic stop after the Timberwolves postponed their game Monday. The game with the Nets was played on Tuesday. Both teams wore Justice and Liberty, and then capitalized for all t-shirts during warm-ups. There was a moment of silence before tip-off for Dante Wright. Authorities said that the officer who shot Wright was arrested today and will be charged with second-degree manslaughter. Here is Kevin Durant after the game.
At this point, you just really don't understand what's going on around here. You know, it's different stories every single day about families' lives getting altered because of police brutality. And I mean, at this point, I really don't know what to say.
Shanae, I feel like we've had these conversations way too many times, decade after decade, year after year, month after month, and now week after week. What is your reaction to the events in Minnesota and how the league has handled everything so far?
Well, I think, Rach, that there are two things that are happening right now. At first, as you mentioned, we saw a swift decision to postpone by the Minnesota Timberwolves and the Twins and even the Wild as well. Leagues are now understanding the gravity of these issues that the world presented back in 2020, and the athletes did not have to plea at the podium for the decision to be made. Mm-hmm. And finally, that's a step in the right direction of respecting the urgency of what is happening in Minnesota and what continues to happen that we see transpiring on the news. Now, the second part is, now people may understand that this is truly a marathon and not a sprint. This is not an isolated incident or one or two names that we discovered last summer. This is a day-to-day reality for communities that these athletes represent. And the fact that this Minnesota community has not even found closure with George Floyd, since the trial is ongoing and is once again thrust into another horrible situation with Dante Wright, it's absolutely heartbreaking. And that's why you saw over the course of 2020, when, you know, leagues were trying to be established and get back to seasons, social justice councils being established by sports leagues, because these problems are on the hearts and minds of athletes, and it will take a team effort to use the collective platform that the game presents to help their communities. So this is why when we see, you know, Jaylen Brown and Kevin Durant at media availability, why it's been shifted once again to these issues, because these problems are not solved overnight and there's too much at stake. That is the why.
What's so crazy is, like, Sterling Brown. So this is not just a, you know, in a certain community. If you remember, it was, I think, 4 years ago where Sterling Brown, his brother played in the NBA. He's playing for the Milwaukee Bucks, and he is sitting out in front of a CVS just kind of waiting to go in. Cops pull up on him. They take him out of his car. They arrest him, not guilty of anything, but just like double parking.
He parked in
the wrong parking spot,
that
and they take him out.
Gets you thrown on the ground and tased.
And on top of it, he didn't resist arrest. He won the civil suit. So before you start asking questions, he actually won the civil suit against the Milwaukee Police Department. So this is what I'm saying. It's like, it could be Matt Barnes. It could be me. It could be Chinee. This is not just, oh, in these communities. We've had NBA players be taken out of their car for parking in the wrong spot, and they, like, you know who I am type stuff. It's like, no, we know who you are. You are an African-American male that is parked in the wrong spot, and we're going to do what we want, because there's very few times that there are repercussions. Yeah.
Our success doesn't limit us from our skin color. You know, we still face this stuff. I had a situation when I played with the Lakers in Manhattan Beach where I was pulled over by the same cop 4 times within 6 weeks, just harassing me. But if you think about it, policing was built. They started policing by slave wrangling. That's how policing was started. So anything that's built on a foundation of hate and bias and bigotry, you see it's finally starting to really show its head. But it's been, for us, it's been showing our heads our whole life. And I think I'm glad that the sports leagues are starting to realize that the magnitude of this problem. But we still do have to beg and plead for the rest of the country to kind of understand what we're talking about. Oh, you want to bring everything, you want to bring color into everything. Color plays a huge part in a lot of different things in our day-to-day life, and police brutality is definitely number one.
By the way, no one's bringing this in. No, there's no professional athlete who's bringing race into anything. There's other people bringing race into everything, and they're the ones that have to deal with it. It is not on the shoulders of people being oppressed to be the ones to have to solve the oppression. It's mind-boggling how many times we have to have that conversation. I do think the actions of the NBA, the WNBA, Shanae, athletes all around this country over this last year are part of what has seen things make at least a small shift.
Yep.
That the officer resigned pretty much immediately and now at least has been charged. How long have we been waiting for officers to be charged in so many other cases? We are still waiting hopefully maybe those days come as well. Chinne, thank you so much for joining us today. I will see you soon, my friend. Coming up, we're going to talk a little bit about the Pelicans as well. It's Point Zion. I'm really excited for this basketball discussion. It's crunch time here on The Jump. Tonight, the Mavericks and Grizzlies game. We got to look at these teams because currently 7th and 8th. Matt, if this is an early play-in game preview, who would you take in that play-in game, Mavs or Grizz?
I'm taking the Mavs. I really like, you know, this team. I think they've underachieved this year. I think there's a lot of hype on them early in the year. They're starting to kind of find their footing. But I think a big piece of what the Grizzlies are about is Jaren Jackson Jr., and he's been hurt for a while. I love what Morant's doing and his growth in that young, exciting team, but I'm taking Dallas.
Yeah, and Jonas Valanciunas is another person that's been having an outstanding year. But ultimately, in any Game 7 situation, with this would be a Game 7 situation,
right,
you want the best player on the court.
Right.
And the best player on that court would be Luka Doncic.
Absolutely. And remember, Luka has so much playoff experience from before.
Yeah.
Even got here, so you can't even just look at his NBA experience when you're talking about that. Let's talk a little Dorcher Chamber, because the man was in his bag last night versus the Jazz. Sweet Lou, a career high 42 points, knocking down 7 threes, which was also a career high. Only Kevin Durant has scored more points before turning 22 in franchise history. Kevin, of course, 47 points versus the Hornets in 2009. So, Richard, you like to see Dort getting a little more confidence?
Yeah, and this is the thing. It's going to be hard for me to say something positive about a kid that went to Arizona State, but you have to understand he was the freshman of the year at Arizona. He didn't get drafted, but he was one of those guys that if he would have stayed in the school for one more year, he would have been a top 15 pick. So I'm not surprised to see his development, but his intensity on the defensive end has always been there.
Yeah, no, he's a defensive-minded guy, defensive stopper, and you think his rookie year, they were allowing him to shoot wide open threes and he was airballing and everything. So I think he's obviously the development, his confidence, and you just love to see young kids, you know, get better.
He had trouble at the free throw line last night. I heard someone say this morning that they should have just let him step back to the arc, to the three point, and then just let him.
It means he's putting in the work though, which I think is a compliment. That's the biggest compliment. Not how great he played, but that he's been putting in the work to play that great.
His teammates really like him too. All right, let's switch gears now. Games happening tonight. Time for our League Pass game of the night. 12 games on the slate, but you know our producers can only pick one that's not on national TV, so they have their eye on Zion against the Knicks at 8 Eastern. Lonzo has been sidelined with hip flexor soreness, so this is really an opportunity for Zion to be the point guard. Stan Van Gundy said, quote, "We want to get him more experience at that spot going forward because that's where I think his future is in this game." And it's interesting, if you listen to more of Stan's comments over the last month, he thinks that the growth here could be exponential. What do you make of that?
I agree. I think this kid is very talented, but I also think from a standpoint of basketball is going towards more positionless anyway.
Yeah.
You know, there's a handful of centers. You know, they happen to have one. But outside of that, everyone's got to be able to do everything. And the fact that this kid is as big and strong, as fast as he can handle the ball and pass, it's going to be a very bright future for him.
Look, they're going to win a lot of games. He's going to have crazy numbers. Mm-hmm. It's going to be MVP in the next 5 years when you look at the numbers that he's able to do. But you got to be careful what Giannis and the Milwaukee Bucks are running into, mm-hmm. where they would just have him at the top of the key and let him play make. Then all of a sudden they pack the key,
right,
and his jumper hasn't developed, and now you have the formula. I like what they're doing with him, but it looks very similar to what Giannis looked like 3 years ago, where it's like he can't shoot, so they back up. But if against a great team in the postseason, they'll pack the paint, and if he can't shoot. So it needs to be in his arsenal, but it should not be their offense.
All right, but Zion has a better three-point shot now than Giannis did at his age. But-